This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time to go to the guest line this morning. And as we mentioned, President Trump has said that Vladimir Putin is playing with fire after the latest rounds of attacks that he has done on Ukraine. And to talk about what's happening now with us, Joe Khalil, the News Nation Washington correspondent, joins us on KMOX. Joe, we appreciate your time. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So we don't usually hear the president speak out so strongly against Vladimir Putin. Usually he tempers the things that he says about him. Does this seem like a bit of a different tone? And if it does, is there anything really behind it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, over the weekend, he called Vladimir Putin crazy, which is not unusual for American leaders. We've heard senators and House members and former presidents call Putin a killer and a thug and worse, but we haven't heard it from Trump. And so this is a sort of shift in tone for him. And I mean, the reason is pretty obvious. All last week, President Trump tried directly to get involved in the peace negotiations, trying to bring Russia and Ukraine to the table. The U.S. has made sort of demands of both sides, and Ukraine has done virtually everything that the U.S. has asked in terms of trying to get to a peaceful settlement. Russia has not. In fact, they've done the opposite. In the week when Trump was trying to intervene and, you know, get a peace deal, Russia ramped up its aggression in a serious way, dropping like 90-plus missiles on Ukraine in that week when, again, the peace talks were happening. Russia killed something like 30 innocent civilians and injured 160 more. So there's an obvious frustration here. Remember, President Trump on the campaign trail said in the first day in office, he would solve this war, this conflict. Now, that may have been hyperbole, but clearly he had an expectation that he could do more to bring both sides to the table. And clearly there is one side, Russia, who began this war that's not cooperating at all. And it's frustrating, President Trump, and he's sort of lashing out because of it.
The U.S. policy on this seems to indicate that they would like to see Ukraine cede some territory to Russia in order to get a ceasefire and get to the end of the line. And I don't personally see that happening on the side of Ukraine. Is American foreign policy at this point neutral between the two sides?
You know, it's sort of a shifting thing. Quite honestly, we've heard people acknowledge that it is likely that they see some kind of American brokered peace deal where, you're right, some of the territory that Ukraine had lost, potentially back to 2014, you know, might have to remain in Russian hands. The Ukrainians are not happy about that. The new territory that Russia had made gains in since 2022, since their invasion, certainly, it seems like Ukrainian leaders are pushing back in a significant way. That may be a red line for them. So, you know, it's hard to see what the deal might look like. We've heard rumblings about it. Nothing on paper, you know, has been released, and President Trump certainly hasn't released any specific details himself. What is clear, though, again, in the last couple of weeks, is that when the United States has said, let's have a temporary ceasefire agreement so that we can at least begin these talks in earnest without killing, Ukraine has consistently come to the table and signed on. And, you know, Putin would have phone calls with Trump where Trump says, I think the phone call went well. And then the next day he's launching missiles into Kyiv again.
So we know that Vladimir Putin's issue, one of the issues, is that he does not like the expansion of NATO. He does not want them to expand eastward at all. And already they have expanded into Scandinavian countries. So Is there anything there that this president, President Trump, would look to do to placate that?
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly see that part of some kind of negotiation to end the war might include a limit on Ukraine entering NATO, or might include a period of years before which they would be able to formally enter NATO. I mean, that kind of thing, you know, we have also heard discussed. Now, whether Ukraine will agree to that is another question, but I mean, certainly something like that could be on the table. I think it's a bit of a fool's errand to, take Putin as an honest broker here, because, over and over and over again, over the years and multiple presidencies, you know, he's made commitments to the United States that he himself has not followed. So if there's a commitment where, you know, he makes a demand of when Ukraine can ever enter NATO, if they ever do, and then he would have to hold up his end of the bargain, I just wouldn't. I don't know what American president, in their right mind would trust that he would hold up any end of the bargain there. So that's where it gets really tricky. You're not exactly dealing with, people who have a reputation for honoring their word on that side.
Joe Khalil is our guest. He is the News Nation Washington correspondent. You hit the nail squarely on the head there, Joe. Putin is a dishonest, malign broker in the international community, and he takes Crimea in 2014. Everybody says they're going to walk away. Now he invades in 2022. There's absolutely nothing that would tell us that even if we get a ceasefire and even if we get an agreement, what kinds of safeguards could be put in place short of NATO membership that could give the Ukrainians a sense that they're going to be protected long term?
You know, we're seeing Europe really take that mantle up in a big way. Europe has increased its own defense spending. You know, when people think of NATO, sometimes you hear, European countries not paying their fair share. People might think it's a big pot of money and everybody pays in. That's not exactly how it works. NATO membership means you spend 1 or 2 or 3% of your GDP on your own military. Those are the NATO commitments. We've seen European countries step that up a bit. We've seen actually just this week, Germany saying that they are now going to provide more long range missiles to Ukraine so that they could potentially do more offensive attacks into Russia, deeper into Russian territory. So I think it's that kind of thing. You know, long term, it's a hard question to answer. And I don't envy those at the State Department and Secretary Marco Rubio and the Trump administration who have to try to figure this out, because it does seem like, over the years, several American presidents have tried to do a quote unquote reset with Russia. President Obama, that infamous reset button, George W. Bush said, he looked Putin in the eye and saw the measure of the man and saw someone who he could trust. It seems like president after president have been sort of lulled into, a sort of false sense that, this time it could be different. So again, it's going to be a tough challenge in terms of long-term security for Ukraine. If the long-term security means a more stable Russia.
Joe, let's turn our attention domestically here, because the Big Beautiful Bill has its approval from the House of Representatives, but it's going to face a fight in the Senate. Just how big of a fight is that going to be?
So there are several Republican senators. I can count five immediately off the top of my head now, who have issues with the bill. And the problem is, it's not because they're all united, these five. The really tricky part is you got two of these senators that say, we need to be cutting more. And then you have three other senators who say we need to be cutting less. So that's going to be a real push and pull for Senate Majority Leader John Thune and for Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who sent this bill over to the Senate. The concerns are that, some say Medicaid cuts and reforms go too deep, right? So you have your Susan Collins, your Lisa Murkowski's, your Josh Hawley's, even, closer to home for you folks, you know, worried about people who may lose Medicaid coverage. And that's certainly a big deal. On the other side, there are some other Senate Republicans who say the cuts don't go deep enough. We need to be cutting more spending. So how this is going to look is between now and the 4th of July holiday, Senate Republicans are going to really be scrambling to make some changes. But the big challenge over all of that is whatever changes they make, it's going to have to go to the House, back to the House. And if it is a monumental task to pass something in the Senate, it is significantly harder with Republicans' very small majority to pass anything in the House. So that is a real tightrope that Republican leaders are walking now. I think Speaker Johnson likened it to walking on dental floss over the Grand Canyon to pass something like this in the House. But they did it once, so they may have to very well do it again. And there are a lot of question marks as to how this is going to go and whether they can get full buy-in from their own side.
Yeah, I mean, you've got on the anti-deficit side, you've got Rick Scott of Florida, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, yes, and Rand Paul of Kentucky. And at least a couple of those guys are on the ballot in 26. So that complicates all of this. When you look at these red states and their Medicaid recipient percentages, and the fact that a lot of Medicare recipients of late have been voting Republican, it's going to make the politics of this thing, if not untenable, extremely difficult, isn't it?
And that's exactly what Senator Hawley has said. He said, look, Republicans under President Trump, this sort of MAGA movement, has become a movement where the party is looking out more than it did in the past for working class voters. But if they are the party of working class voters, then obviously that means you're going to have a lot of people who rely on Medicaid. And what the bill calls for are reforms to Medicaid, things like work requirements. But where that gets nuanced and tricky is you may have people who very well want to work, who are working, but who may be working, you know, hourly jobs, and there's a minimum of hours you got to work. So if there's a month where, you know, you don't control your own schedule or your hours and you're not getting the hours that you want, all of a sudden, do you lose your health care? I mean, those are the serious questions. And again, where it gets really complicated. And, you know, there are estimates that tens of thousands, if not more, will lose their Medicaid coverage under this bill. But Republicans continue to say that's not going to happen, that, you know, that this is bluster. But these are coming from estimates from nonpartisan entities that assess these bills. So, you know, Senator Hawley may very well have a point here, and that's why he says that until some changes are made, he cannot support the bill. Remember, the Senate has 53 Republicans. So for them to pass it, they need to hit 50. Because if it's a tie vote, then Vice President J.D. Vance comes and breaks the tie, the bill passes. They can afford to lose 3. They cannot afford to lose 4. And right now, as you and I have been talking about, there are more than 4 Republicans who at least have concerns, if not outright opposition.
Do we have any idea what the constituents of some of these Republican senators are telling their representatives, you know, telling their senators, you know, not to vote for this because they don't want to lose Medicaid, because they don't want to lose their benefits?
I mean, we know that senators' offices have been getting phone calls. Certainly. The tough part is, you know, I'm not in there screening calls
right
for who's actually making these calls. So, you know, Republicans will sometimes say it's a bunch of Democratic activists blowing up their phones. I don't know that that's true. I have seen outside the hearings that I've been at as this bill was being voted on and crafted, we saw hallways full of people who were protesting with signs and concerns. And, you know, that is very real. You know, you don't often see big, massive crowds like that outside of congressional hearing rooms. But I saw them. I was there just, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago. So there's obviously nationwide, there is a lot of concern that people may lose their health care. It may just be one of those things, too, where if it happens and that is a consequence, that's when you might get the real backlash. Remember, every single member of the U.S. House is looking ahead to 2026. There will be midterms. They will have to answer to voters. And many senators, as you point out, many senators will have the same reality in 26. So, you know, usually simple basic math of politics is people don't like when they have something that's taken away from them. They like when they get things, right? Very basic. So if all of a sudden, in earnest, people start to lose health coverage or denied access, people who genuinely are not cheating the system and are trying to work and do the right thing, you could see that being problematic.
So this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Republicans have to get this done. And because if they fail, this is going to be the only significant piece of legislation likely to pass in this next 2 years, perhaps the next 4 years. What is the timeline that you think is necessary to get this done by before the politics of 26 intervene?
Well, so there are a couple of deadlines. So the Senate says that they have wanted to get this to the president before the 4th of July holiday. Whether they can do that, that is, we'll see. Sometimes they impose a sort of arbitrary deadline to get the process moving. The government does run out of money at some point here. And that X date, as they say, is, you know, end of August or into September is what we've heard. So it seems like before September, there would be real economic calamity if this is not done by then. They would need to raise the debt limit, which Republicans have added as a measure into this bill. Also remember that President Trump's 2017 tax cuts do expire. So if this bill doesn't pass and nothing is done, those tax cuts expire. And what the practical impact of that is that virtually every American will see a tax increase. So for those reasons, and Republicans are campaigning on that, actually. Republicans are saying, you know, by Democrats not voting for this, you know, Trump big, beautiful bill, that Democrats are voting for a tax increase. But that would be the practical reality if nothing passes. So there are a couple of, you know, deadlines that are serious that if nothing passes by then, you know, they we're going to be in serious trouble. So, you know, August, September, you imagine is sort of the last date, unless they do something else where they raise the debt limit independently and then give themselves more time, sort of kicking the can down the road. Certainly that's possible. But yeah, that's what we're looking at. So they have, you know, I mean, summer's right around the corner here.
That's Capitol Hill correspondent for News Nation, Joe Khalil, with us on KMOX. Joe, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Of course. Happy to be here.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.